If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Utter deep breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Graham America Show. Coming at you. Well, Graham's on the road. We're both headed out. I'm jumping the pond a little later today to go over to the UK for a few days and hang out with Tony the Fag and a couple others.
Taking the night shift, the night plane?
Yeah, I'm taking the night flight.
Nice.
I don't know that there is a better flight. You know, if I could like design my own flight, that'd probably be about when I'd want it to be.
Yeah, I'm doing the night flight to Greensboro too.
It kind of gives me just enough time to like get onto the plane, get settled, get taken off, and kind of just the time when you settle down into that high altitude. It's dark and it's around my bedtime. You know, It's 10:30, it's around my bedtime. And if I get to sleep, you're at least a little bit hopeful to get
some real sleep, yeah.
4 or 5 hours of sleep, yeah. And this time it'll be better too because I got the wife with me. So we got two seats to work with. That really makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Because I had a window on the way to England last time. But on the way back, we were scrambling around so much between them planes. It wasn't even England, right? It was Germany or something.
Yeah.
But I didn't check in for that flight. So I was just crammed in the middle.
Yeah.
But I was like, the good thing was I was like the fourth seat back, like the fourth one behind first class.
Yeah.
So you get off the plane quick. But the get off the plane quick thing ain't worth it on an 8-hour flight.
No. Yeah.
Not be in the middle. The extra 20 minutes won't kill me. So, this time we got a window and an middle. So there's, we can both kind of lie down. And
yeah.
So hopefully it'll be good.
This episode is Aidan Gabor. His book was Conflicting Loyalties, My Life as a Mob Enforcer Turned DOJ Informant. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, it reminded me of like Goodfellas, like literally like the main character in Goodfellas. He kind of got the tap from the DOJ. And I mean, it's not like he went against the mob, but it gets pretty interesting about catching bad cops basically for the DOJ. Really interesting.
Absolutely. So what time's your flight then?
Well, I'm doing the night flight to Greensboro on Thursday. So
the red eye?
Yeah.
So it leaves at like 4 a.m?
No. It leaves like 11 at night. Yeah.
Dude, I remember when those flights used to be empty.
Yeah.
You could like wander to the back of the plane and take three seats and lie down. When I moved out west here, you used to be able to take that flight to Winnipeg, and if you got the late one, there'd be nobody on it.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I've been.
No, they can't fly unless they're like jam packed.
I can't remember the last time I've been on a plane that I even seen more than one or two empty seats.
Yeah.
I had an empty seat beside me the last time I came back from Kamloops. But other than that, man, it's all jammed up, man.
So yeah, I'm on the coast right now, helping out my sister, working for my sister for a few days, and then going to the Cosmic Summit. And there's a new code. Like I think they've sold out the main tickets, which is fantastic. I think there's day pass standing room only, and virtual tickets. And you can use the Como code. You can use the promo code. It used to be FOMO15 for 15% off, and it's not a code of ours. This is just a code in general, I think, like coming close to the event. FIMO. So FIMO15. FIMO. I don't know what do you know what FIMO stands for?
FOMO?
No, it used to be FOMO, but that one ended. Now it's FIMO. So
FOMO,
I don't know if that's
would be fear of missing out.
Yeah. So fear in missing out. Fear in missing out. I don't know.
We have missed out at this point, right?
Yeah. So there's still some tickets available for that.
Checking it out, what FIMO means according to my phone. That doesn't know.
Yeah. Maybe that's just the next sort of code along with the ticket thing, you know?
Oh, wow. FIMO is the name for a brand of polymer clay made by a German company. Dude, I might have to go to Russia. Did you ever hear about this? Me and my buddy Jesse might have to go do this.
No, what is it?
Did you know that there's a cruise in Russia that let you hunt down real-life pirates for $10,000 a week? In fact, according to the laws in Russia, it's actually not illegal to kill pirates in the open sea. And you're also accompanied by qualified soldiers and given your own assault rifle. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call the fun fact.
Wouldn't that be fun? Hunting down pirates? Like, what kind of pirates?
The boat pirates, I guess. Probably mostly smallies and shit. I don't know.
Butt pirates? No?
Probably that too. I mean, Russia's kind of, you know.
See, now they just start changing the definition of pirate and you can start hunting all kinds of crazy stuff.
All sorts. That would be fun to me. Like being up on the front of a boat with an assault rifle. That's worth 10 grand. And then we could do a GoFundMe. Go pirate hunting. I think it's probably a scam, but if it's not. I mean, international relations aren't great right now, so maybe not the best time to do that kind of stuff. But oh, that buzz does go away when you hit mute, so it's definitely something going on, maybe with your headset. So anyway, I don't know. We got to support the show, you guys. GrahamAmerica.ca/support. I don't think Graham has one donation to mention, but I didn't get any donations to the support thing since the last show. So that's a whole week with no supporters. So I don't know what to say.
About that. Let me go try and find that.
You should have forwarded it to me.
I did, actually.
The email?
I thought I did, yeah.
Let me take a look. I saw the email come through that you had received it, but I didn't think there was an email attached to it. Says you have the email from Stump Stalker.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
So $40. Thanks, Stump Stalker. We appreciate that. I mean, that's all it takes. $20. Shit, $10. We'll read your note. I mean, come on.
Oh, it's not in my. It's not in my folder for some reason. Oh wow. How is it not in my folder? That's crazy.
In your show folder?
Yeah. I make a folder, like an email folder for all that stuff. So here it is. So, anyways, he says, we'll mention big fan from BC, Stump Stalker on IG. And I want to send an e-transfer, so he sent the e-transfer. He's a wood arrow builder, traditional archery supplies, stumpstalker.ca. And he's been listening for a while. I remember because when we were getting into archery there, remember he was talking about how he makes arrows. He says he's a white guy living in Haida Gwaii. So I'm happy you're covering the story and to have Darren's input. Nothing has changed here on the ground yet. I'm expecting some growing pains, but not much is really going to be different. But time will tell. Thanks. I just want to make sure I can say his name here. Blaine from Wood Arrow Builder Traditional Archery Supplies. Yeah,
dude, I'm still waiting for my stuff to fix my bow.
Oh wow. What's wrong with your bow?
My drop away rest fell apart.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, and now with the government being all fucked up, you know, everything.
What?
Well, that whole not wanting to work. I think.
What does that have to do with your archery? What does that have to do with your archery?
I come from the States, so has to go through customs, which is CBSA, which is, of course.
So, like, because it's a part from a bow, it's going to be held up in customs?
Well, no, customs just takes longer because everyone's bitchy because they have to work 3 days a week.
Right.
Instead of two.
Right.
But I get it. You know, I don't want to work either. So I don't know what to do about that. I'm going to get a recurve next, like yours.
Yeah.
What poundage is yours though?
Oh, I can't remember. 50 maybe, or
is it that much?
I don't know. 35. I don't know. I can't remember.
I need a 40 for sure. So I can hunt with it at least.
Yeah. It's not expensive, but I guess a recurve really shouldn't be, should it? It's just one simple bow, right? I mean, I wonder if some stalker makes bows or it's just arrows. I don't know.
It'd be cool if he made bows. A nice handmade bow would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Totally. A long bow, like right out of Robin Hood. And,
like 90-pound
medieval England, yeah.
I think some of those old ones were like 110-pound draw.
Imagine that.
You couldn't even just pull it back. You just jump on a 70-pound bow, it's hard to pull back.
Yeah.
Even 60. If you haven't done it, you got to work up to that because it's like weird muscles, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I could probably pull a 90 now. But you really got to get used to that, just pulling it through, because there's no hold on that. There's no hold. I mean, they do in all those old shows. They're like, knock, draw. And then all those dudes are just sitting there holding their bow back. No one's quivering.
Waiting for the signal.
There's nothing. They might knock, and then they don't draw until they shoot, period. No one's drawing 110-pound fucking bow back and just
chilling. And waiting.
All right, no problem. You know, that's the fucking... It's like a slingshot. It's not meant to be held back. It's just a fucking... That's the next thing I want to get into, though. Next season.
Yeah, cool.
I feel like it. Well, dude, I was doing it down on Bowman's Ranch, and it definitely felt a little more natural than the compound.
Yeah.
Probably harder to hit a 3-inch circle at 75 yards, though.
Yeah, totally.
Probably a lot harder. So there's that. Anyway, what else you got? You want
to
keep
it? That's about it. No, we got to keep it short. I got to get back to work here. I got lots to do.
You got to work. I got to pack. We're on the road for you guys getting information. I'll be at the Tycho's thing with Nigel, and I forget the other dude's name. I'll have to look at Nigel and Henrik, I think, right?
Enjoy the UK, man. You're going to be a stellar trip for you. That's awesome. Yeah, enjoy.
Yeah, it should be good. And say hi to everyone down in the Southeast. I was actually, if I would have went that way, I could have went hog hunting with Brandon Powell for a couple days, which might have been all right. So next year I will definitely make the Cosmic Summit.
Right on.
I'll commit to that now, assuming they have another one.
Yeah,
you've got to be selling CAC trips while you're there.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, well, yeah,
the Columbia Gorge just started moving again, so
good
to sell a bunch of those right away and get some people up here to Canada. Yeah. The November trip. So it looks like we're going to add Mark England to that, but I don't have that official yet.
Okay.
He wants to come up and hang out with Brandon. So
cool.
Yeah, that'd be a hell of an add on. He's does some pretty cool stuff with the writing your story or, whatever it is. But he does that on a super high level. So, anyway, we'll leave it at that. We're both busy. I got to pack. Graham's got to paint. Support the show. Email us. Most of all, enjoy this chat with Aiden Gabor.
All right, Aiden Gabor, welcome to Gray America. We are going without Darren here because his internet crashed right before the interview. So thanks for joining us in Gray America.
Oh, thank you, sir, for inviting me in.
Yeah. So just for
here.
What's that?
It's an honor for me to be here, sir.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. Well, I mean, just so our audience knows, I mean, most of the people will get this on audio. But there is a few people watching the video, and it's on a bunch of video platforms. So Aiden's like, he's got a, obviously that's not his real voice, and he's not on camera here. So he's got to stay somewhat anonymous, I guess, through all this. Kind of a whistleblower type book in a way, right?
I guess you can look at it that way. It's just more of a, my life and all the bullshit I went through.
Right. So what made you read the book? I mean, or sorry, write the book. I mean, we were talking a little bit before you started recording, and there was one of your friends was kind of putting you up to it. Like, you should make a story out or make a book out of this. And was that really what,
you know, I was having a bunch of night terrors. I was having a lot of problems.
Wow.
And my wife could not scream if she couldn't figure out what was going on. So I talked to my buddy, Sam, and somebody I knew my whole life, and he's just like, I don't know what he's going through. I mean, I was grabbing her and throwing her around. I was pretending to handcuff her, screaming, punching at the wall, just whatever. So he came out and he saw me, and we talked, and, you know, he didn't know anything about what was going on. All my buddy Don really did. So we put Don ended up coming down. So the three of us were sitting there talking, and Sam's like, you know, we just went over everything, you know, like he couldn't believe what my life was. He knows about 80%. And he's like, dude, you need therapy. We got to get you therapy. And I'm like, I am not seeing a shrink. You can kiss my ass. And, you know, I saw something, and then I kind of saw, you know, I knew before I have no empathy, and I don't care if I hurt somebody. It doesn't. I laugh when I see violence on TV, and I've been like that since a kid. And that sociopath like talk, you know. And so they kind of did a strange. They're like, yeah, he's got some problems. And so at therapeutic, he says, let's write this down. We need to write this down. And so after a little bit, he's like, you know, dude, you got to do a book. We got to do a book. And I'm like, no, we're not doing a fucking book. And he's like, yeah, we're doing it. Let's do it. No. And Don's like, yeah, dude, you know, I didn't even know I was helping you out till after everything was done. And, you know, him and I had a come to Jesus me and let him beat the crap out of me because I did use him a little bit. And he, you know, we ended up, yeah, okay. And so Don left and it was just Sam and I, and we went on more. And so we ended up getting a book together, and therapeutics will help me, but it opened up a lot of hidden doors and stuff that came back that I really was suppressing. And most of it is the attempted suicides and stuff like that, and screaming and you know, some of the other stuff I did that I didn't put in a book, and it's just opened up a lot. But I think it's helped a lot because it helped me spiritually to learn. You know, I started getting real spiritual during all this. Prior to writing a book, I started doing that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I was going to kind of jump ahead and ask you if you were you part of the Baha'i faith when you're having those night terrors? Like what? And if so, like what do they think about that?
You know, I didn't have any of that prior. I was just starting to read, wow, and started figuring it, and then as the book was going, as we were finishing up writing a book, I became a full-fledged Baha'i because, you know, I was reading everything they believe in. I've kind of believed in my whole life. And like Sam said, you were always Baha'i. You just didn't know it. And wow, it's kind of true in all of us.
Yeah.
And I, being a person who was not religious whatsoever, I mean, I used to laugh at people that did. My buddy Don, who was extremely, he's a Catholic, extremely religious family. I laughed at him. I'm like, seriously, don't fucking talk that shit to me. I don't want to hear it. And I used to joke, I worked for the other guy. I grabbed people for the other guy. That's who I worked for. And, you know, I just felt something one day with this, with the whole Baha'i faith that I never felt. We're sitting outside in the sun, beautiful sunny day. And I felt something different inside. I did not like that feeling. I'm like, fuck, I don't like it. I'm going in. Sabrina's like, what's going on? I go, I don't know. So So I just was quiet, and I went back out, and I felt it again, and got by looking up at the sun, and I never felt it. And I started reading more. I was out there reading some the writings of Aldubarai, and it just different feeling, a different thing, and I felt wow. And as I got more into it, it really and it helps that you have a support. If you don't have a support system, you can't get through anything. And Sabrina worked with me every day. Going through it, they have Rui classes for the Baha'i faith, and she did it. University State
Christian faith. What classes?
They're called Rui. The Rui classes are classes for Baha'i faith. You learn about the faith. Oh, okay. And there's 15 books, 16, I think 16 books. And so she went through it all with me, even though she's going to stake her Catholic faith, and did it for me for 2 years. Went through it all, and eventually to a point where, hey, now you get to do this on your own, and still supports. She reads me some of the writings and all that to this day, because I have some issues with trying to remember things. And as far as what I'm reading, like, because I have dyslexia, so I have sometimes problems reading. So, long story short, she just really stuck with me, and Sam would come down and see me, and we'd go over it more and more. And he's like my father for the faith, the Baha'i faith. So, yeah, that really, you know, changed me. I mean, I see the world that we're all equal, you know, green, purple, yellow, whatever. We're all the same.
Yeah.
Bleed red. Men and women are equal. I grew up a mama's boy. I don't care who didn't. I talk to my mother every day till her passing. And I grew up a mama's boy, and in the Baha'i faith, men and women are equal. Where in some faith, the women are subservient to the man. I don't believe in that. If you own any household, who runs the household? The woman, the wife, the mom, something of that nature. And so everybody's equal. And that's how I've always thought. And that's why Sam was like, you're always a Baha'i, you just didn't know it.
The lady that was helping you through that, did she change into Baha'i too, or?
That's my wife. No.
Yeah.
That was my wife. My wife did not know. She stayed her Catholic faith, but she went through every class with me three nights a week for an hour and a half. And she did it with me throughout it.
Huh. So let's go into like some of the meat of this then, the book. I mean, it's quite a story. You know, you've you know, kind of the bad kid in a way, like getting involved in stuff you shouldn't, and then later on approached. I mean, where do you want to start? Like, it's I've got some questions, but I guess we should sort of lay some of the background in, you know?
You know, where do you want to start? I mean, you start my childhood. I started with the family. My dad was an associate with the Cabo, and I was a good friend. We grew up, we did family things. We had these dinners, we got all the families together, kids were outside, we're boys, we get in the last couple. I was the youngest by several years, but I was also as big as these kids. And the difference is, I didn't give a shit if they beat punched me. I'd still come back. I'd hit you in the back of your head if you walked away or turned on me. I would get in scuffles out there and get bloody. And the one time the police came, and I told them we were wrestling. And I told them to get the fuck out of here. And they're like, oh, no, we know he's beating you up. I go, nobody be ever, we were playing. And you know, I go inside, and the mom and the older, from the old country ladies, she would be like, oh, what's going on here? The boys will be boys type of thing. And I started, they say, hey, come by the shop one day. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, hey, I'd start riding my bike. And they would have me ride my bike to play drop this off. And then maybe pick up some, but don't look and just bring it to me. And they'd give me 40, 50 bucks. And I mean, at that time, I was like 8, 9 years old. We'd go to candy store. I was a king. All my buddies like, wow, yeah, we're going to candy store. And we'd load up with $30, $40 worth of candy and some other crap, whatever we found in there. And that would be it. That would, you know, I go back, I was doing this for a long time. So eventually I got old enough. They taught me how to drive and learn things in the shop. I'd go in the shop and I would clean, talk to the guys in there and just learn. And that's how I got started with that, with them.
Well, people must have mentioned this to you before, but I mean, what's going through my head right now is Goodfellas. I mean, the story starts with the guy as a boy, right?
I have no clue. I really don't watch. I'll be honest with you. I watch documentaries. Movies to me are, you know, I get in trouble if I watch movies. If somebody gets hurt or somebody, I laugh.
I can't
watch a movie with you.
But you got to watch Goodfellas because Ray Liotta's. His character as a boy starts out as a boy riding a bike for the doing all these like
yeah I've seen that one. Okay,
yeah,
that's the one where it's, you know, like everybody says. I remember I had a couple I know what you're talking about because there's so many ones out there and half are like so much bullshit.
This one with Joe Pesci, like the real kind of classic, right?
Yeah, but you know what, everybody says, hey, you guys did this or you guys did, you know, we weren't rocket scientists, all right? We just grabbed what was at hand and did things at hand. We didn't, you know, where I was at was a chop shop. So you got to think of a garage with like a little social thing around it. And we did things, you learned things, but you weren't doing anything too kinky. I mean, if you did something out of different, man, you're being kinky. Now that's kinky. But then if you do something stupid, you bring attention to yourself.
Right. Even doing dealing drugs, right? I mean, there was sort of
that was a no. Eddie's first thing he said, we prostitution, we did gambling, we gave money, protection. We didn't do with the drugs, and the reason was, I can't say the exact words because I know, I mean, I would, but I don't want to get my wife pissed off at me. Let the blacks deal with their neighborhoods, the gangs, and let them do their own. We'll get a portion of it because we technically work together. And whenever they sold something in the area that we were in, we would get a little bit kickback from that. But we didn't deal drugs. That was a big no. That was there's another gentleman put in his book. His name was Nicky. And Nicky was the, if he got involved with something, the shit got real. That's the way I can say it. He really just played cards in there. He's an older one that was with Eddie his whole time, and he really was second in charge, but he never really talked as much. He just pulled me aside and he goes, I like your dad. This is how you use this, don't use a knife. And he gave me an ice pick, and I was like 10 years old. I'm looking at this guy like, what do you give me a stick for? And he's telling me, no, you can use this. And somebody could, you just hit him with this several times and drop it. No fingerprints, and you get another one. It's just a basic thing. And he started teaching me how to use stuff like that. You go in the back of the neck, you put a right spine, and all that. And, you know, and yeah, in that one movie they had him in there, but that's is what they would taught you what to use, is what they had. And these guys have been doing it a long time, and they said a knife is too messy. It's more for cutting, and if you can use this more for jabbing, it can go through a vest, and you could run. And I'm going to be honest. To this day, I carry an ice pick with me everywhere, and I carry a 9mm and ice pick, and I don't care where I'm at. It's next to me on my bed. It's on me when I leave the house, and it's just who I am, I guess you can say. It's just things you learned over there as a kid. You know, you look at it and it like you didn't want to do anything that was different, is the kind of way they put it. But you know, they always talk about, you know, you watch a movie, they killed this person. The only time anything bad happened is we get more the violence or towards other crews.
Right.
If they're poaching, you don't poach. You don't come into somebody else's thing because you're going to get yourself your ass handed to you in a word, not a good way. And you know, the same thing, and you know, and if people that the degenerate gamblers or the ones that if they acted up, I mean, you just gave a lesson to them. You give them just an attention getter. So a lot of guys would, you know, learned a long time ago, you carry a baseball bat, carry a glove in a mitt. There you go. You can't be charged with anything. Because you have a ball, a mitt, and a bat. So I'm not allowed to play baseball anytime. And I like, you know, I carried a blackjack too, which you can just toss, no fingerprint, and you know what? You're great. I don't know if you know what a blackjack is.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I carry, because you can hit somebody pretty hard and it wouldn't leave that much of it, just a little bruise. but I was an attention getter. Just wanted an attention getter. Again, when we talked with people, and you had to have a real come to Jesus talk, you would hit them. People would hit them in the legs. I like hitting in the ankles because, first of all, that would knock them to the ground, and that's your wheels. You take the wheels up. The worst they can do is crawl toward your knee. They can kind of get up, but the ankles, they ain't getting up. And then you explain to them, this is what you need to do, or next time we're going to really make sure you're going to be crawling for the rest of your life in a wheelchair. And that always seemed to work. There really wasn't any like they do in the movies, let's go get this person. Let's go. When the shit got real, it was a little different. And a lot of times you hear about it, you weren't really involved in it.
Right. So were you sort of looked up to as a kid too, like when you went from sort of being a child in the candy store to like school playing sports, like did you, you know, were you kind of infamous in a way with your buddies and all that? Were you pretty?
No, I didn't know. We didn't talk. I was told not to talk about it. So I didn't even talk about it. It was my job. I would tell them I would go caddying. I used to tell them I'm going to go caddy. And a couple of my friends were like, dude, you should be caddying. Yeah, I stopped at a girl's place. And I would go over there and learn things because it wasn't like, hey, bring your friends over. You never brought anybody. No one ever really came with me.
So you kept your school life separate from this other life?
You know, I did because, you know what, because Eddie was a very, when he talked to you, he had these eyes, and it's hard for me to describe, but when he talked to you, he meant it. It was one of those, you kind of figured out right away, you know, don't you say shit about nothing about nobody. And I'm like, yeah, I ain't say shit. And we like, you know, because I think what he did is because I would get in fights or I would hit somebody and there would be no remorse. They would laugh. And I know they thought that was a little screwy, but then they realized, well, this kid can get shit he needs to get done.
Yeah, exactly.
But my problem with that is we had Dominic, which is more like Eddie's right-hand guy. And the first time hitting him, he didn't like me for some reason. I don't know if it was because of my father, because I was not full Italian. I don't know what it was. But he's always an asswipe. And he one day, you know, he pushed me around. He's pushed me around one day where I fell onto a bunch of stuff against the wall. And I picked up a pipe and I hit him with it. And he turned around a gun and Eddie stopped him. And he had a hammer back and I'm looking straight down. And Eddie's like, come on, stop with the bullshit. And I learned that I got pulled aside, respect. You don't do it. You give respect for each other. And this shit's going to stop now. So about a year after that, we went to go talk to somebody. And we're in the car. And I'm sitting there, and he looks at me, and he just punches the hell out of me. And I'm telling you, the punch is almost like those cartoons. You know, everything is spinning, and I'm like, and he goes, that's for fucking hitting me a pipe. Next time I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. And I just remember I just hurt. It hurt. And, yeah, I shut up at that point. Him and I really weren't really talkative at this to start with. But at that point, I'm like, fuck you. And we went on. And I know years later, that was a motherfucker who tried to kill me. I think he's the one still, but he's dead. So who knows with his family? They're a bunch of screw ups anyway. And so that's, you know, that's really when I was growing up that you learned. I mean, after a while, I drove Eddie. They taught me to drive. So it was kind of a funny thing to let me drive, you know. But there's a couple times, I mean, I remember one time you were sitting there eating and this guy's walking by and Eddie goes, that motherfucker owes me 20 grand. And I just went taking off. And I started grabbing the guy. Guy's looking at me and I punched him and then he got to run. I'm kicking the shit out of him. And I'm still got my sandwich in my hand. I'm eating a sandwich. And Dominic's like, what the fuck is your problem? I go, you better get your other shit. He goes, this motherfucker's eating the shit. I mean, I tuned him up pretty good. And he's just like, you know, enough. He got the point. And we see you, we know you anywhere, fucker, and I'm getting pulled off, so eat my sandwich. I'm like, go fucking sit down. And he's like, God damn, we're going to call you Sandwich. And that's how I got that stupid fucking name. And so that was, you know, one of the little incidents with him that you know, and I did have a quick temper, and I think I still do, but I'm trying to work on it.
So when was this? When was this? When you were growing up as a teenager like this? When did this all start? Was it the '80s or nineties? Or I don't know how old you are.
Right? I'm just going to give you a guess between the '70s and eighties.
Okay. I felt like it was. I'm 53, turning 54. So I grew up in the '80s, like from 10 to 20, it was in the '80s for me. So it felt to me like you're resonating with me, like it was in around when I was growing up. It feels like, you know, like I'm picturing kids I knew from school that were tough guys in a way. And it's, it reminds me of some people at school, you know?
Yeah. You know, let's put it this way. My generation more, we're going to beat with baseball bats and knives and, you know, guns were just an afterthought. Unlike nowadays where these kids think guns are to, with being PlayStation kids thinking of shooting a gun and doesn't realize what's coming out the end of that barrel is life-changing for everybody. And back in the day, it was more of a hands-on. And that's where I learned to be more hands-on than you know, the almighty gun.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the crime these days and the cops and how they get it? They seem to get away with more crime these days compared to when we grew up.
Our societies, I'm going to just say, I don't really watch. Like I said, I watch documentaries. I don't like watching TV because I don't like what I see. This country's imploding within. And it doesn't matter if you're left, right, whatever the hell you're at. No, there's good and bad and evil side. And, you know, if anything, I'm all right. But it's more of a, the country just the way it is. You're letting the criminals, I mean, back in the day, it was younger and all the shit together. Now, holy shit, the stealing, going through, just take them wherever you want at the stores and, yeah. And the shoplifting. Oh my God, we would have gotten away with murder. But you know, we got away with a lot of shit, but we got away with a lot more would have been brought in. I don't think right now it's good where we're at. We're hurting as humans. You know, it's just sad. And the way kids are nowadays, because I grew up way before there was cell phones and computers and shit like that. These kids nowadays have no clue. And you grew up in the '80s, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That, you know, everything started in the '80s kind of, but the '90s and the 2000s were exploded. And you're right. The way that everything is now with the crime, the everything, you know, we're kind of screwed right now, is how I guess you could say.
Yeah. So like for I guess for your crimes, the FBI singled you out because they knew they must have been on you for a while and realized that you're fearless guy with not a lot of empathy, but you can probably keep your secrets. Like they must have known that you kept your lives, you know, your circles apart. I have a hard time picturing that all happening nowadays, you know?
No, I never really, I'm going to tell you right, I didn't deal with the FBI. I didn't deal with the DOJ. The G-men assholes, there's so many on the take, but there was, you know, and hopefully they gotten their shit straight. But back then, you know, didn't my generation and the cowboys from the cocaine cowboys and all that shit. When the drugs started coming in, and that was the '80s and shit, I really never dealt with the FBI.
No, but didn't you get tapped by them eventually? I mean, how did the whole like?
That was all DOJ. What it was is when we started, the FBI came in to arrest everybody. Arrested, and Eddie came and said, "You got a chance to go play ball. Get out of here. Go do what you got to do. They really don't know you. The FBI arrested Dominic. They arrested this. I'm leaving. And I'm just going to go. You need to get away. And all I ask you to do is keep just now and checking on my son." And I said, "Yes, sir." And that was it. It's the last time I saw the man. And never until I got to college, then the DOJ decided to show up and being 18 and being naive, the shit that they pulled on me. So,
did they what?
They showed up and they said, "Hey, we need to talk to you." And they walked in my dorm and I'm like, "Who the fuck are you two?" And they're like, "Don't worry about it." And they're like, "All right." And then they show me your little credential. I'm like, "Oh, that's pretty." And they're like, no, you're coming. You can go with us. You go to jail." I go, "Do I need a lawyer?" He goes, "Oh, it depends on you." So I decided, what the hell, I'll do a fishing expedition. I see what the fuck they're want to talk about. So we decided, hey, fuck, I got a free meal out of it. So we went to, I don't know what the fuck the thing was, big green or green building with the arches on there. I don't know what they call it. It's no longer in existence, or whatever line of restaurant. But we go in there and they sit there, kind of talk, we order, and they throw this envelope in front of me. Look at it. It's great pictures. All right. So I open it up, and it's got a picture of me talking to Eddie, and it's got a picture of my dad with Eddie. It's got a picture of my mom with Eddie, and another picture of my mom talking to Eddie. Another picture of Eddie by my mom at the house. Another picture of my mom and dad and Eddie, and then Dominic and me talking to you. Like, yeah, you're looking at, you know, this new thing called Rico. We're going to, you know, it is. I'm like, oh, fuck it is. Oh, you're looking at 70 years in jail. And I'm like, for what? And they're like, for all the associated and the shit that they did. We know you're involved with them. And we got, and I'm naive. I'm 18. I had no cars. I'm shit. I really wasn't worried about my dad going to jail. I was worried about my mom. I was a mama's boy growing up. And like I said, anybody out there that's not, that's the guy that says they're not a mama's boy, they're full of shit. And I grew up a mama's boy. And he worried about my mom going to prison. But I said, whatever. They go, well, that's all we want right now. You're in school. We want you to finish up and kind of flunk out. I'm like, what? Yeah, just kind of, you know, drink your way. We got something for you. Unless you want to go to prison. I mean, it's up to you which way we're going. I didn't know. I'm stupid. Didn't want to talk to my dad. We didn't have a great relationship. And I thought, you know, I knew some shit I was thinking in my head. It's like, here, we'll let you think about it. So they gave me 3 fucking months to think. I didn't sleep at all. And eventually it came up that, you know, I showed up. They showed up again. We went out. And I said, yeah, what do you mean to do? It's a, you know, flunk out like we said. So I just started partying. He goes, play with the girls. You know, you got college girls. Play with them. Have that. So we'll give you a little money. So I drank my way out of school, got over there, got home, didn't tell my parents yet that I was leaving school. It was getting summer. And also night they called, they kind of said, hey, we need you to meet you. So I met them at this restaurant, and they told me they want me to get on, to go over and test them since I was in shape, to get on to this police department. And I'm like, what? And the boss, and I'm like, no. And like, yeah. I go, I don't want to be a fucking, he goes, no, this is what we need you to do. Just get on, we'll let you know after that. So I'm like, you know, I thought to myself, you know, hindsight, you know, probably you told me to get fucked, but not knowing. I was still, you know, I was just 18 going on. I was like 19 at that time, going on 20. And I was like, okay, so if I could test my way on in the academy, I'll be through. Yeah, okay. So I did it. I went over there and I said, yeah, I'll do it. So when I got home, I told my mom and dad I was not going back to school, that I wanted to be a cop. my dad exploded. My mom's like, oh, no. My dad's just like, are you fucking, you're going to be a fucking flatfoot? Get the fuck out of my face. And I didn't talk to my dad for about 10 years after that. Because I was a disappointment and stupid and whatever. And so I got an apartment. That's where I started doing the, they wanted me to catch dirty cops.
So did they, but they, so we gotta get into some details here. So would they have helped you through, like if you weren't passing the tests and stuff, would they have helped you through that? Or did you have to do all that on your own, obviously?
No, I never, all they said, get on. Never found out what the alternative would have been. They didn't give me, they said, get on. I got on. It didn't get to the what would happen point. Nobody said nothing.
Right. And you were pretty confident that you could make it through and stuff. Because, I mean, I knew a lot of guys that tried to become a cop and they couldn't get through. I mean,
way back then, you know, you had to pass like 5 out of 10, you know, the written, which I think a 6-year-old can do back then. Not sure now. And just be physically fit. That was really it. You had to really be physically fit. And I got all through that flying colors. You know, they made you drag something. You had to weight lift. You had to run. You had to jump.
Don't they do a background check and stuff on you? Like, how did that go?
Yeah, they did all that. And they said, you know, I was never convicted of anything.
Right, right. So
you, was never convicted. I was never, you know, I was one time I got picked up and I got let go without getting any charges. My whole life. Eddie's kept me and my dad got me out of a lot of shit. And so I never got in trouble. I stole cars, never got caught. That was the whole thing. But I didn't have anything. They weren't going to help me. And see, what it is they told me, they're right up, straight up, right at the beginning is, you're going to do this on your own. You're going to do this because you're going to do it. That's pretty much it. You're not going to be anybody there to help you. There's not going to be anybody there if you get in trouble. If you get in trouble, oh, well. You know? And I was afraid of dying at that point. I was a kid. I didn't think I'd ever die.
Right.
I wasn't worried about it.
And they didn't tell you at the beginning that it was to go after bad cops, right? I mean, did you have any fears that it would have been about, like, because the question that comes up in my mind is like, would you have done it if you had to go after the mob or if you had to like go after the guys that you used to work for, you know, because it's different. Yeah. If they're going to bring you in to go after dirty cops, that's a little bit different.
You know, I wouldn't have done it. I'm going to tell you this day. I'm going to say this. I never did say anything, do anything against any of them, right? Guys, I ran with the crew. Anybody, I never said a word. They can kiss my ass. You know, people think I did. I didn't. I don't know who the fuck did. But as far as those guys, you know, if they would ask me, I would tell them to kiss my ass because that was a family.
Yeah, exactly.
Cops and shit. We used to sit there in the shop and I'd see cops in there all the time. And, you know, detectives and all this. And they're getting money from Eddie. I mean, they were getting stuff. I wasn't seeing the exact change of the money. I'd see the packets going to them and they'd shake hands and then they'd give them information. Sometimes they'd close the door and I wasn't involved. So I got a little older. Then I saw the guys and I used to see these guys. And I realized, you know, one guy, I remember sitting there, I was like, I don't know, 13, 14. I'm like, you a cop? I was cleaning the shop. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to see him. He gives me his little badge. I'm looking at a detective, whatever. I said, oh, okay, cool. He's like, you want to be a cop? I go, fuck no, fuck you. And that was it. And then, you know, I don't know. I think the only thing I can ever think, and I mean, they were not a very talkative group. They're more demanding. And they really didn't say much other than, like I said, I was a stupid kid. Other than we need to get this done. And when it started out, I was like, oh, geez, okay. But I think what it is that they knew that they wanted to go after dirty guys. Well, how do? You get somebody that ran in circles like that they can trust, or I guess I send a snake into the snake pit or whatever the way you want to call it. And I mean, I knew a lot of these guys and seen a lot of these guys, and they knew what I did, like the officers did, but nobody ever did anything. And I got on. And they asked me after several months and all this to get close to this one officer. And I'm like, when I started working there, I'm thinking, oh, they're kind of laughing up to the academy, you know, the green. And I mean, you learn so much shit as an officer. And I'm going to tell you, the things that they see, I never thought of. I mean, I thought I seen it, but they see a lot of bullshit. They see the sets full of everybody. And so I just started, you know, okay, I'll do this. They get close to this guy. And I mean, I met the guy and his name was Terry. I go, my God, this guy is the biggest asshole in the world. He was the most abrasive person I've ever met. And I met some real assholes. This guy topped the cake. I'm the one that nobody liked this fuck. And they said, get close to him. And, you know, I did, you know. And then he realized who I was. He goes, I know you. Who the fuck are you? He goes, no, I know you. I didn't say nothing to anybody. You used to run with Eddie. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's like, okay, so just kind of shut up about it, but, you know, I don't want it broadcast. And he's like, no, that's what I would do. I got a crew I'm running with. I go, okay, I don't want to hear your shit. And I mean, we were on a couple months, and he started just talking about the shit he did. He was a cop that was a hitman, supposedly. So I, you know, how many out there like that? And he's talking about the shit he did. We would drink. He was a gulper. I don't know if you know what that term means. He would drink so fast, it wasn't even funny. So we went out, and eventually we went back to town. He just started telling me shit. I'm like, I don't want to hear it. Shut up. And he goes, oh, no, I know what you did. And so I go, you don't know anything I did. You have no clue. No. I'm working as crew to ask me to do this and that. And they're like, I don't want to hear it. So, you know, I went and told these guys that. And they go, well, what's going on? He goes, go get more. You know, these guys asked me to meet them like a year into this bullshit. And I told him, I mean, this, he said he did it, but he's not 100%. I go, you need me to test right? He goes, no. We'll explain that to you later. Get more. So I went in there talking with the assholes, and eventually his wife just told, she was losing it. Oh my God, Eddie told me, you know, Terry told me about you, and here you ran with Eddie and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay. And he's just like, oh, I can't take her. I go, you need to shut up about that, not do anything. So a couple months later, I meet up with the two dumbasses, and they're like, here, what he got? And I'm like, here. I mean, he told me what he did, and now the wife's breaking. She's losing it. You just pump her, and she's going to give you everything. I mean, I'll go up and testify. I don't give it. They're like, no, we don't want you to. This is really, we want to see what would happen here. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he goes, no, because if you testify, it's one and done. We don't want that. We want you to get in and get information. We don't care about you testing. We want you to get information for us to use to put these guys in jail. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? He goes, yeah, now we want you to, you know, after everything's going to hit, we're going to get this. We're going to tell you when it happens, we need you to leave. So about a month later, all of a sudden the FBI and everybody hits this place. And all of this arresting him at the department and all that. And all of a sudden everybody's feeling like, I don't know how you'd say it, a ship, when the rats leave the ship, guys are leaving the department. So I just left. I left. So they said, you know, okay, you need to leave. So I left. And then it became to my, I went on to say, get on this department. Like, are you, fuck you, I ain't going. That's the department I grew up, the town I grew up in. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, no, we want you to get on there. We know we can get on there with no problem. So I went through the testing there, and I got called in the mayor's office, and there's the commissioner, and I look, Aiden. Hey, how you doing? We know you. Oh, yeah, I know. Right? Yeah. How you doing, guys? Hey, you're going to toe the line, right? You get on, toe the line, do what you've been told, sir. Whatever you need me to do, sir. So you do whatever needs to be done. I go, whatever you need to do, sir. Okay. Yeah, we know you're a good pedigree. All right. And that was it. And then I got on.
Were you getting paid for all this?
Oh, yeah, I got little stipends here and there. You know, they would, when I would meet up with them, they'd give me some money and all that. You know, at the time I was getting married, they gave me money. Yeah, I was double dipping, I guess is what a word you could be used for it. But yeah, I was getting little stipends here and there. I mean, it wasn't like I'm going to go to the, you know, go to, you know, off to the Bahamas with it, but it was enough to, you know, it was good money. But yeah, basically being paid for informing on the bullshit that I would see.
And so, and there was the arrest. For a second there, I thought you were going to say like it was just about info gathering and there wasn't the big arrest. But I guess it must have been weird trying to just still act a cop and still act like you're just one of the boys that are leaving the department after all that.
You know, I was worried about that until two officers went on prior to me.
Yeah.
So they were probably looked at more so than I was, and then two more after me.
Right.
And like I said, it was like the rats leaving the ship. You know, I had no clue what was going to happen. I'm going to be honest. And I mean, I'll be honest, I wasn't too afraid. It's that stupid, that sits the way I am. Like nowadays, they're different. And they tried to kill you a couple of times. You're thinking, nah, okay. Yeah, they're really still pissed. But, you know, back then, I wasn't worried about it. And I, you know, I went to another apartment, got on the next department, the one I grew up in. And I knew a lot of those officers that were, I would see him with Eddie growing up.
Yeah, that must have been weird then. Because
did
you bump into that cop that you they met as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I met almost every one of them. We just kind of laughed. There was no, we didn't, I mean, I hit my, and my best friend was on the department. So I would hang out with Don. And, he'd been on for a couple of years prior to me. And so nobody really said anything. Nobody questioned me because I think one guy had said a smart comment to me at a bar and I fucking decked the shit out of him. And after that, nobody really said much. We had our own little, our own little like cliques. Everybody did. You know, we were with the crew, Don, or, you know, Don was with me and stuff. And, you know, I was a really sociable guy with a bunch of these guys because I knew a lot were dirty, but just, you know, I'm one of those ones, I'll drink with somebody I like. If I don't like you, yeah, I'm not going to fucking drink with you. I don't care how much you ask. So I guess you could look at it that way. And then, you know, then when they asked me, hey, can you look at this guy? Give me names. I'm like, fucking, they gave me a name, a list of names. And which ones are bad? And I'm like, this is fucking half the department, if not more. Fucking just arrest everybody. That's what you fuckers do. Well, I'm like, no. And they had Don's name on there. Are you fucking kidding me? Don was pure as can be. He was not the sharp. Don and I, like, we're not the sharpest blades in the drawer. You know, we'll giggle at the sight of keys. Ooh, keys jiggling. We were like that. Don was like that. He was as faithful as a dog can be. We are, to this day, we talk every day. And, not every day, well, every other day, whatever. We talk several times a week. And so we've been like that since kids. We knew each other since, like, Sam and I knew each other since we were 6. Don and I knew each other since we were 10, or less than that, 9. But anyway, it would go there, and, you know, Don would be there, and he'd hear things like, hey, we talk, or cops talk. But once you get in law enforcement, I don't know if you ever heard this. When I ran with any of them, we had a family, and Lathena, and we stuck together, and we had a family. In law enforcement, the thing called a blue line, you stuck together, men and women in law enforcement. You had a blue line, and you kept your blinders on. You saw things, it was between you and them. It was between you. And that's the way it was, you know? And when I started giving information first on a couple of narco guys that were doing the drugs, and they made it easy because there was a kid I grew up with. His brother ran this garage, not quite garage, I guess a storage area. And these two dumb fucks would go whatever they get and split it up there under camera. And I knew the kid, and he's like, yeah, these guys are in there. They tell me to leave. He goes, can you get me a tape? Yeah, we got it. That was easy as fuck. And, you know, several, you know, we got them for that. And then, you know, Don would hear things in the year department talk about it. But at that point, I started becoming an alcoholic. And I started having nightmares. And my nightmares was the St. Michael with the flame coming at me and say, you're betraying, and hit me with the sword. And this is my dark point where I started to drink, get stupors, and then I would just end up by myself at hotels. And I would have a 357 I used to carry, and I would have it next to me. I'd find it with a round in it. And I remember at least 200 times, I remember spinning it and putting it in my mouth and my head and pulling the trigger, hoping it would go off. It never went off. A couple times I had 3 rounds in there. I mean, I don't know what God was looking at me and saying, you know what, we're going to let you stick around. And I was in that very bad, dark place till Don found me one night in a hotel. And my ex didn't really give a shit because I would be at police work. You don't know when you're going to be home. And she really didn't give a shit when I was home or not. And I was in a dark place, and I started that. But throughout the whole thing, we ended up putting several police officers and a couple politicians in prison.
Wow. Local
politicians I know?
No.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say anyway. But, it was all locals. It was all Leos. Several politicians, commissioners, and shit like that.
That seems to be a little harder, too, these days, it seems to me. Like, I don't know if that would happen these days. Politicians don't seem to be getting anything happening to them.
Oh, who knows? I don't care what politician you are. They're somewhat dirty in one way, shape, or form. Taking money from him, from here, doing that. That's how I look at them. I never liked them, but I didn't really see this. And people I knew that were politicians that were dirty as fuck. I don't know. I don't trust politicians. I don't care if brand new or not. The longer you've been in, I think the more dirtier you are. That's my opinion. But, you know, unfortunately, just the way it is, politics is politics. Going throughout this, at first I was like, but after, you know, these guys should really protect us. You know, I want people to know, too. It's the only reason with the book is there's one bad police officer to make 100,000 good men and women law enforcement look bad. It does. You know, they're all fucking bad. They're all dirty. They're all this. But, you know, I think everybody, all these naysayers should take one day and walk a mile in their shoes and see the shit they got to deal with in a big city and learn that what the fuck are the shit that they got to go through, and then understand the suicide. I understand the men and women that, you know, there are a lot of good officers out there, and I want them to know that they are trying to take away the bad apples, I guess you can say, that they are trying to do it. But there's always hitting the thing, and again, the blue line's one of them, because you're a family. And that's why I kind of got it, was more with it, because when I grew up, we were family with Eddie and I. We were family. We watched each other. We took care of each other. We may have not liked each other. It's like a family. There's family members. You fucking think, well, I fucking dickhead. We had that, but you still watch out for each other. It's still family. Law enforcement's the same way. And I want people to understand it, what they go through, that, you know what? They can be good. Just like, you know, and they go through a lot. Just like the men and women in the military, people treat them like shit, but without them, we wouldn't have what we have today. And I mean, I've talked to some vets, and I'll talk to them, because I went through a dark time wanting to kill myself. And I know a lot of them go through the same thing, that, you know what you see, you can't unsee. What you've done, you can't undo.
Right.
You have to go forward with it. And if you need to talk about it, that's your best way. And that's what Sam and Don did for me. They made me bring it out. I didn't tell them everything, but I told my 80%, 85%. Sabrina knows more, but that's my wife. And, you know, you got to get it off your chest, because it eats you up inside. And I mean, I remember pulling that trigger. And I know if I remember 200 times, how many times do I not remember? Yeah, and every time I hear about a suicide with a military or law enforcement, it breaks my heart.
Did all this change your opinion about the government, or how much to trust the government? I mean,
No. This made me actually. Law enforcement's one thing. The government as a whole, the agencies, they use you into what they need. And they promise you the world, and then they shit on you. At the end of it, it just came in and, yeah, thank you. We did everything you needed to do. Thanks. You know, peace out. That was it. Never saw them, never heard anything from them. They gave me a check and that was it. I mean, sure, you get paid, but that's how I don't trust the government. I don't trust what they say. I don't think that, you know, yes, do they try to do good? Yeah, but some of the means to get the evil off, I get it. You know, you gotta take what they trust and go with that. But then just to say bye, peace out, and that's it. I mean, when they're done with you, that kind of left a little sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah. What should they have done? What's that, Darren?
Well, I was just wondering, like, what was it like down there? Because here, you know, our cops really let us down when the government said you can't leave your house because of COVID and your kids can't play on this playground. I mean, we have fucking cops guarding playgrounds so that my kids couldn't play on them. So I kind of, you know, it kind of became pretty apparent that in Canada, at least, these cops were just going to toe the line for whatever the government told them to do. They will come take my fucking guns if the government. That was the key takeaway from COVID, is these fucking guys will come take my guns if the government tells them to. So I'm wondering if down there, do you have a different feeling like that? Do you feel like these guys will stand up for what's right over what the state tells them to do?
People I know don't. Yeah. Most will stand up and say, no, we ain't gonna. If you look around in the United States, mostly southern states now, they're, you know, we're a guy in Florida, a sheriff down here, that they had a guy shoot a robber, and he goes, you know what? We wish you would have killed him. You know, you got shit like that. You got guys in towards the West that say, you know, if they tell us to go take your guns, we're not going to do it. Sheriff's departments. And yeah, you're going to have some that's going to toe the line. You're going to probably get these young ones that they want to make something name for themselves and think, you know what, only me still only be carrying a gun. But I'm going to say about 80% are going to be like, no, fuck you. We ain't going to do it. We'll quit. And we look at now, they're quitting in droves now as it is. You know, nobody's going to work in Minneapolis. No one's going to work in Seattle. I mean, they're all leaving in droves because of all the bullshit and the politics that go on.
Right.
You know, I'm a big Second Amendment guy. You want my gun? Come on, take it. See how it works out. You may kill me after I got ALS. That's all right. But I know I ain't going by myself. And I'm sorry to say that. It just makes me hurt inside. And I'm a Baha'i, and we're not supposed to be leaving violence or anything. But like Sam said to me, you're to be the best Baha'i you can be. There's a lot of stuff. You're not supposed to swear. You're not supposed to drink. Oh my God! You got to be the goodiest two shoe motherfucker in the world. And I love it. I love the Baha'i faith. I believe in it. But I can't do everything they ask, and I do the best I can do. And yeah, there's no way. I don't know. You're up in Canada, so I'm not sure. Canada is kind of, I don't know what's going on with the government up there. But is that where you're at? You're up north?
Yeah, we're in Canada, yeah. And we're in sort of the Texas of the north. So, I mean, Darren's in the supposedly freest province of Alberta. And I just moved to Saskatchewan. So it's very similar in some ways to Texas and all. But our cops and our police system, like, that was the question I had, is what Darren asked too, is like, what is it like for your cops when the government starts telling you to do these crazy things? Like,
it seemed like
in Canada, there was no real pushback. It didn't seem, I mean, I'm sure there was people in the precincts that were like, no, like, let's, that didn't want to, but from an outside appearance, it seemed like they all just towed the line.
You know, you're going to get probably about 30% that are going to be the total liners. And then you're going to get probably, I mean, in the States, you're going to get probably 20% of the in-betweeners. And then you're going to end up getting about 50% that are going to be like, no, hell no, we ain't doing this, because it's not right. And it's proven when you have your weapons, somebody with a weapon, criminals tend to think twice.
And that's the other difference. So that's the other difference, is we don't really have a lot of weapons up here. I mean, there's no Second Amendment. We can get in trouble for defending our property. There's no sheriff's department, so it's all sort of more of a centralized police force, because it seems like you guys have more flexibility with the sheriffs, kind of have a little bit more authority there as well. So there's a few main big differences between up here and down there.
Yeah, down here, the kids nowadays, 20s, they're just the most disrespectful little fucks there is, and they would think they can get away with it, and a lot do. And law enforcement kind of give them back in the day, we would have kicked the shit out of them. Nowadays, they're like, a little babyish with them. But most officers they're fighting to keep the Second Amendment. But you know what, like, you got to put out there, and I tell a lot of people, you got to look at this, right? And these are Baha'i, and they're thinking, oh, we don't need guns. We don't need. I go, ask the Germans back in 1933 how that worked out for them. First, you take their guns, then you can take their freedom.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Nazi, and what happened in World War in 1933 and 1919 in Italy, and 1917 in Russia, you take the guns away. Yeah. And then right here, they had the brown shirts in Germany. They had the black shirts in Italy. In the United States here, we have those affirmative, whatever they call them, and the Black Lives Matter. They're their little, like, and then when eventually they're done using them, they're going to do what the Nazis did. They're going to kill them all. They'll put them in jail. Oh, now you're bad. You're good when you do what we needed. But once they take your guns away, and I think people are starting to realize that down here, that's a problem, And I think, I mean, especially if you're in Canada up north, with you guys are dealing with moose and polar bears and shit like that, the more wild animals, you guys are going to need weapons to defend yourselves, I think, more so than some places down here. I mean, we got animals, but they walk more on two legs down here.
Well, there's a big controversy over bears, because, I mean, that's one of the things Darren's talked about a lot, is you're not even supposed to have a handgun when you're out hunting to protect yourself from bears and stuff, so...
Oh my God, I've been to Alaska and ran into a grizzly bear, and I had a 9mm on me, and the guy looked at me and goes, that's pretty. What are you going to use it for?
Well, yeah.
A grizzly comes at me and goes, what, you're going to piss him off? I go, I can shoot. I'll shoot him in the eye. Yeah, that's going to work for you. And he goes, here, why don't you have a long gun or a, and then he gave me a .44 Magnum Auto. He goes, try this. That might take him down, but I would run still after shooting him. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, we saw a grizzly until we walked up to it. That motherfucker was big. Its paw was as big as my stomach. And I'm not a small guy. This was a big-ass bear.
Yeah, Darren, what are they? What is that? Am I wrong about that? The handguns? Is that, what, or what do you, what do you?
Well, it depends if you're a Canadian or an Indian. I mean, I would consider myself as outside the jurisdiction that doesn't allow me to carry my handgun in the bush. But technically you're not supposed to.
No, but I mean, would it help? I mean, obviously, like he's saying, it wouldn't help against a bear.
Right? Well, I go back and forth between my 357 and my Glock because the thing is with the Glock, you're going to get like all those shots in that bear's face. Whereas with the 357, you know, you're probably going to get one good one off, maybe two if you're lucky, but it takes a lot longer to get that thing back on target. Even the 45 auto, right? It's going to be hard because that it's fucking shaking all over the place. That 9mm, you can fucking just, you know, whap, 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 whap. So, I mean, this is an ongoing argument I have with myself on which sidearm is better. I haven't been attacked by a bear, so I don't know, but I go back and forth because you know what I mean, right? Like in the time I can get three decent shots with my 357, I will have emptied my Glock clip, you know, into like into a 2-inch circle.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a 6-hour P226. So yeah, I can get 16 rounds off. Yeah. Before. And I was, everybody like, back, you know, we go places. I have friends of mine are walking there. They'll have an extra clip in their pocket, and I'll be like, "What's up with the other clip? Well, in case I don't, you know." I go, "I got 16 rounds. If I can't get them in 16 rounds, I deserve to die." That's how I look at it. You know, I carry other weapon I have is a nice pick. That's last resort, and then that's it. That will go through anything.
Yeah, 16 is better than 6, too. You know, that's the other thing.
Yes, sir. I had a 357 Trooper 3, and that's where I used to try to play. That's where I used to play Russian roulette with.
Plus, if that bear gets on top of me, if it starts eating, if the bear gets on me, I might just want to, you know, turn that thing around on myself if it starts ripping my entrails out or something.
Pretty much would be about it. I just saw when I said we got that grizzly, a buddy of mine got the grizzly, and I saw how big those suckers were. And then if you got polar bear, which is supposed to be bigger, yeah, no thank you. I don't want to be around to find out me getting eaten alive.
Polar bears actively hunt people, too. Those are the only ones that, like, actively hunt people. A black bear, you know, probably doesn't want to fuck with you too much. A grizzly will fuck with you, but it's not looking to. A polar bear is looking to eat you. Like if it sees you, it's like, ooh, fucking look at this. So the hairless mammals, just, you know, it's just like a seal. This thing's making fucking hay on. So they're happy to do it. The saying goes, if it's a black bear, you got to try and scare it off. And if it's a grizzly bear, you play dead. And if it's a polar bear, you probably are dead. I mean, you just got to like, if you can't get away from the bear, it will hunt you. There's an old story about some people that were like stuck on a little fucking ice thing because their boat broke, and they're like their boat like maybe sunk or something or whatever happened. But or maybe they were on the rowboat part of it, but they were out stuck on this fucking ice thing, like an iceberg, basically a big ice shelf iceberg. And they're waiting for another boat to come and get them, and it was going to be, you know, a day or whatever. This is back in the day. And this fucking polar bear just came, and they watched it swim from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, and fucking came up on the thing and grabbed a dude and drug him back to the next island and fucking ate him. And then when he was done, he came back and fucking grabbed another one. And then, you know, I think then they got rescued, but I don't know the whole story. I this is like third hand. I just heard this shit, but it's like the,
so
yeah, man. So the bears see you and they're like, okay, fucking game on. There's some food.
Too bad Richard Parker wasn't there,
eh? Yeah, you know, I mean, shit. Yeah, I would turn on myself, you know. And like going through all this shit, I became spiritual. And that's what really changed my life is spiritually. Believing in a Baha'i faith made me, I think, a better man to make the world a better place. But again, every day I try to be the best Baha'i I can be. That's all I can ask.
Yeah. Do you think we covered everything? Is there anything you want to mention before we wrap it up?
Yeah, other than if you want to get the book, you know, it's going to be go to conflictingloyalties.com. It will tell you exactly everywhere to go you can pick it up at. That's your best bet to get it. It's just go right on conflictingloyalties.com.
Right on. Well, thanks for coming on and talking about it. And thanks for sharing your journey with everybody.
Well, thank you. It was an honor to be on. I mean, do we have everything covered? Do you guys? You guys got any more questions on anything?
No, I think it's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Sorry, I missed the first 20 minutes. I blame Elon. It turns out that there was a global Starlink outage for 20 minutes. It seems to be back up now, so.
I must always get you.
You should see how quick that X turns on Elon when Starlink goes down.
Oh, yeah. Well, gentlemen, it's been an honor to be on with you guys. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man. Stay safe.
You too. Stay safe. Stay warm in the great up north. Great north. All right.
Will do. Okay. See you, buddy.
See ya. Bye. Yeah.
See ya.
See ya.
And that was a chat with Aiden Gabor. What'd you think? Gabor?
Gabor, probably.
Gabor. Yeah. I feel like that's the least likely.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm just thinking of the other guest we were going to have on, Gabor, many years ago. We were going to have a Gabor on. Remember? That's how he pronounces his name.
The Mate one that wanted money?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Gabor. Oh, maybe that's Gabor. Gabor Mate.
He wanted $2,500 to come on the podcast to help people get fucking up.
He's the only guy that wanted to charge us money to come on the show.
No one else has ever asked for money. He's like, yeah, I'll come on $2,500 an hour.
We're like, buddy, we're talking about your work. No, that was a good good chat with Aiden. Hope he stays safe. It's a pretty interesting journey. I mean, it totally reminded me of Goodfellas. I mean, it's really weird. Right out of Goodfellas. That movie had an impact on a lot of people, including me.
Did it?
Oh yeah, one of my top. I mean, that's got to be like one of the top movies. It's probably in my top five. Yeah, Pesci was in that too, wasn't he? Or is that why you mentioned that? Do you not remember Goodfellas? Or
I've seen Goodfellas? Yeah.
Yeah, just
this kind of staple of my conditioning that I, you know.
Yeah, totally. That was like an initiation. Was watching that movie. Well, because Gabor was talking about.
But he turned out to be just a rat fuck, you know. I mean, we were just watching this movie, and like pedestalizing this dude that just ratted out all his buddies.
Who?
Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta, yeah.
Whoever Ray Liotta played, you know, he was kind of the head character who kind of descended and ratted out all his friends.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, because he was riding around as a kid. They show him as a kid, and that reminded me of what Aiden was saying. Like, he was kind of, you know, working early for these guys. Yeah.
Funny how. Fucking Joe Pesci.
Oh, yeah, that was classic.
Classic. That dude's just like probably mobbed up the whole way. Did you watch all the Sopranos then too?
No, I didn't. No, I wasn't really into the mob stuff. It's just Goodfellas was a special case in a way. Like,
I've never really seen the Sopranos either.
No, but somebody just brought it up with me yesterday or the day before about the, what was it, about his NDE? Apparently one of the seasons was about Buddy's NDEs or something like that.
Tony Sopranos?
I don't know. One of the guys, I think something about that. Huh. I'm trying to remember what it was now. And I was just like, oh my God, I just never seen it. Didn't really.
I
wonder if that would be a good show to watch nowadays. It probably, you know, some of those shows from that time frame are probably pretty good.
It's best to just watch nothing. You don't need to, you know.
I know.
It's probably not very good. Yeah, wasting your time. Anyway. Big thanks to Aiden for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Hey, we're trying not to waste your time over here. So if we're not wasting time, if you're getting some value from our 657 or 658 podcasts we put out for you guys, you know, 1,200, 1,300 hours of content, if that's added some value, maybe to your commute, maybe to your day job, maybe to whatever, head over to grimerica.ca/support today. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation, and we will mention you on the show and be forever in your debt. Check out Grimerica Outlawed for our other podcast. adultbrain.ca for all the audiobooks. And contact at the cabin for the trips. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Somehow I built a rocket ship out of the stuff dreams are made and popsicle sticks. Please look at my rocket ship schematic. Tell me it can fly to the moon. Tell me I'm not a lunatic. I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet you think I'm the space cadet. I bet, I bet, I bet you think, I bet you think I'm the space cadet. No regret, I do not fret, 'cause I'm a space cadet. In my hands I have a gas can and matchsticks. Yes, Earth is my home, but I need a vacation from all the sadness, the chaos and dramatics. I'll let you do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, no hesitation. Yeah.